Mahabharat, Chapter 64, Arjuna's Great Vow. As the sun set, Arjuna asked Krishna to drive him back to the camp. After slaying thousands of Shamshaptakas, he got down from his chariot and, along with Krishna, offered prayers to Sandhya, the goddess of twilight. The two friends then mounted the chariot and made their way through the deepening darkness toward Yudhisthira's tent. As they traveled, Arjuna suddenly felt an inexplicable anxiety. He said, "O Govinda, why am I suddenly feeling misgivings? Why is my speech faltering? I see evil omens all around me, and my limbs are becoming weak. I fear a great calamity has occurred. May all be well with the king, my venerable superior, and his followers." Driving the chariot expertly through the day's carnage, Krishna replied, "Seeing all these slaughtered Kauravas, I think everything fares well with your brothers and ministers. Do not give way to evil thoughts. Probably a trivial calamity has taken place." Arjuna, still anxious, tried to accept Krishna's words. He said nothing as the chariot moved across the field. He thought of Drona. The preceptor had been intent on capturing Yudhisthira. Had he succeeded? Arjuna trembled at the thought. If anything had happened to Yudhisthira or any of his brothers, he would be unable to live. Even if it were the dead of night, he would challenge the entire Kaurava army to come out and fight, and he would exterminate every last one of them. Within an hour, they reached the camp. As they entered its perimeters, Arjuna looked around and said, "O Janardhan, I do not hear the auspicious sound of drums and other instruments signifying our success. The bards and minstrels are not singing songs describing our victories. Everyone is turning their faces away when they see me. No one has come forward to salute me in the usual way. O Madhava, is everything well with my brothers? Seeing these men so obviously distressed, my mind is disturbed. Is Drupada well? Has the Virata ruler encountered a calamity? O you of undeteriorating glory, what has happened to our warriors?" Then Arjuna began to suspect the truth. Abhimanyu had always greeted him when he returned to camp, but today there was no sign of the boy. On his way back, he had heard from some of his soldiers that Drona had formed the Chakravyuha. He knew there were only two warriors on the field who could break into that array, Abhimanyu and himself. Arriving at the royal tent, Arjuna dismounted and went in with Krishna by his side. As he entered, he saw his brothers sitting with downcast faces. No one said anything as Arjuna walked in. They could not hold his gaze and shifted uncomfortably in their seats. Then Arjuna saw his son's empty seat. His heart stopped. He approached Yudhisthira and bowed at his feet. Standing, he looked into his brother's downcast face. "O king, you are pale. I also see that Abhimanyu is not here, nor does anyone welcome me. I heard that today the Kauravas form the Chakravyuha. Save and except Abhimanyu, no one could have penetrated that formation in my absence, but he did not know how to get out of it. Did you ask my son to enter that terrible arrangement? Has that fierce bowman, that slayer of hostile heroes, after breaking into the enemy ranks and killing thousands, gone himself to death's mansion?" Arjuna began to cry. Falling to his knees, he cried out to Yudhisthira in a piteous voice, "Tell me how he fell, he who possessed mighty arms and red eyes, who was born into our race like a lion born on a mountainside, and who resembled Indra himself. How was he slain in battle?" Arjuna saw tears in Yudhisthira's eyes. His own eyes flooded as he realized what he had feared most was true. Yudhisthira's silence confirmed it. Taking a deep breath, Arjuna fought to control his mind. His head fell into his knees and he sobbed. After a few minutes, he looked up and continued in a broken voice, "What foolish warriors, urged on by evil destiny, ventured to slay my son? How has that youth, who who resembled the high-souled Krishna himself in prowess, generosity, and Vedic knowledge, been killed? If I do not see that hero, who is my second self, Keshava's favorite, and so dearly loved by Krishna's sister, then I too will become a guest in Yamaraj's abode. If I cannot behold him, that modest boy of gentle speech and kind deeds, with curling dark locks, eyes like a young gazelle, the tread of a furious elephant, and the shoulders like a mighty lion, then I will leave at once for death's limitless domain. Krishna stood by Arjuna's side and placed an arm around his shoulders. The Pandava grieved loudly for some time, describing his son's many qualities. His brothers and allies sat in silence, their hearts riven by grief as he continued. Although younger, that boy was my superior. He was virtuous, grateful, obedient to his elders, and always desirous of doing us good. Self-controlled and sinless, he pursued only the path of piety and truth. He was faithful and devoted to serving God in all his acts. In battle, he would never strike first, nor would he attack a helpless foe. He was the terror of his enemies and the shelter of his friends. How has such a boy been slain? Arjuna fell to the ground, repeatedly crying out his son's name. Composing himself with difficulty, he said, "Today my son lies on the bare earth like one forlorn, although he was always attended by the most beautiful women. He who was formerly attended by servants and bards chanting his glories is now attended by jackals and vultures. His face, which was worthy of being shaded by royal umbrellas, is now shaded by dust and dirt. Alas, how unfortunate I am to lose you, and how fortunate are the gods to gain you. Surely Yamaraj, Indra, Kuvera, and Varuna, after receiving you as a welcome guest, are now making preparations for your worship." Arjuna looked up at Yudhisthira, who looked back at his brother with compassion. His eyes bloodshot and his face streaked with tears, Arjuna asked, "Please tell me, O best of men, has my son gone to heaven? Did he have to contend single-handedly with numerous heroes and give up his life after killing them by the thousands? Surely he would have thought of me, afflicted by the mean-minded Duryodhan and by Drona, Karna, Kripa, and others. He must have thought, 'My father will rescue me.' I think all those ruthless warriors felled him while he was calling out to me. Or it may be, as he was conceived in the womb of a Vrishni princess, that he did not make such exclamations." Arjuna censured himself. How had he allowed himself to be taken away from the main fight? Obviously, Duryodhan had concocted a plan that required his absence. Why had he not seen it? If he had, Abhimanyu would still be alive. Without thinking about his kinsman's welfare, he rushed off, desiring glory in battle. And now his son was dead. Arjuna cried out, "Without doubt, my heart is made of stone, that it does not shatter into fragments. It will surely break apart when I hear the lamentations of Subhadra and Draupadi. What will I say to those gentle ladies? How can I tell them that Abhimanyu now embraces the cold ground, weltering in his own blood? What indeed will I say to Uttara, his chaste and beautiful wife? The Kauravas may rejoice only for as long as I do not return to the field. For slaying my son, they will have to grieve as I do now." Arjuna turned to Krishna. "Why did you not tell me what was happening today, O Madhava? Surely I would have burnt the cruel Kauravas immediately. How could they aim their deadly shafts at such a tender boy, attacking him when I was absent? I do not think he found any protector while among those vicious men. How could you allow this, O Krishna?" Krishna comforted his friend with sober words. "Do not give way to grief. This is the inevitable end of heroes who never think of retreating. Those who know the Vedas have said that this is the highest and most desirable goal for a Kshatriya who knows his duty. Heroes always covet such an end. There is no better death for a warrior than to fall in battle while facing the enemy. Undoubtedly, Abhimanyu has gone to regions only reached by the most pious men. Do not lament, for you are plunging your brothers and followers into sorrow. You know everything, and it behooves you to console your kinsmen at this time. Take hold of yourself and throw off this grief. Arjuna turned slowly to Yudhisthira. O Lord of the earth, tell me exactly how my lotus-eyed son was slain. His voice had become cold. His grief was giving way to an intense fury. How did he fight our wicked foes? I will consume all of them with their elephants, chariots, and horses. Why, O brother, did you not do so yourself? How was my son slain when you, Bhima, the twins, and so many other heroes were present? Surely you all possess no prowess, for before your very eyes my son was killed. No one spoke as Arjuna strode over to his seat, his long sword swinging by his side, the Gandiva in his hand. His eyes blazed and hot tears ran down his cheeks. He sighed repeatedly. No one dared look at him. Only Yudhisthira and Krishna, who were always agreeable to Arjuna, were able to say anything. After a few moments, Yudhisthira said, O mighty armed one, when you had gone to fight with the Shamshaptakas, Drona exerted himself to capture me. He formed the unbreakable Chakravyuha and advanced toward us, showering his fire-like shafts in all directions. At that time, I asked your son to penetrate the formation and allow us all to enter. Without delay, the boy rushed forward and entered the array like Garuda entering the ocean. We followed him with upraised weapons. But somehow, the puny Sindhu ruler held us in check. We have since heard from Vyasadeva that Jayadrath received a boon from Mahadeva that he would be able to stop us in battle. Your son was alone in the formation. 6 Kaurava Maharatas surrounded him. They destroyed his chariot, armor, and weapons. Worn with fatigue, he was finally slain by a 7th, Dushasana's son. Arjuna wailed. Yudhisthira paused and then went on. Before dying, he slew countless heroes, many of them kings and Maharatas. Now he has ascended to heaven. Through the inscrutable workings of fate, he has attained his destined end. Thus we have all been plunged into a sea of burning grief. Crying out, O my son, Arjuna rolled on the ground. Everyone gazed at each other with vacant eyes. They said nothing as Arjuna expressed his grief. Gradually he composed himself and got to his feet. Shivering as if with fever and wringing his hands, he spoke in a low, controlled voice that seethed with rage. I will say this truly. Tomorrow I will slay Jayadrath, if indeed he does not forsake Duryodhan in fear of his life. If he stays in the battle and does not seek shelter of either Krishna or yourself, O King, he will die tomorrow. Whoever tries to protect him, be it Drona, Kripa, or anyone else, will find themselves struck down by my arrows. That Sindhu ruler caused my son's death. For this act of violence toward Abhimanyu and I, he will die. Arjuna felt all his anger directed toward Jayadrath, who had already shown himself to be a despicable wretch when he had assaulted Draupadi, and this time he would not escape. Although Abhimanyu was assailed by 6 Kaurava warriors at once and finally slain by Durjaya, it was Jayadrath who was to blame. Many times warriors found themselves overwhelmed by superior odds, but their allies and supporters could always come to their rescue. Abhimanyu would surely have been saved if the Pandavas had been. After looking around at his brothers and allies, Arjuna went on, If I do not kill that wretch tomorrow, then may I never attain those regions meant for the righteous. Let me instead go to the hell reached by those who ravish their own mothers, or those who are malicious, ungrateful, or miserly. Let me reach the dark worlds inhabited by rapists, slayers of Brahmins, betrayers of trust, men who seduce others' wives, who are unkind to guests, and who deceive and cheat others. If I do not kill Jayadrath tomorrow, then such will be my end. Arjuna's voice seemed to shake the earth. Now listen to one more vow I will make. If I do not slay Jayadrath by sunset tomorrow, I will enter blazing fire. Neither the celestials, asuras, mortals, winged creatures, rakshasas, rishis, nor any other moving or unmoving creature will prevent me from achieving my aim. If Jayadrath enters the nether regions, or somehow ascends to heaven, I will still find him and sever his head from his body. When this night passes away, Abhimanyu's enemy will see me as his death personified wherever he goes. After solemnly speaking these words, Arjuna violently twanged his bowstring, producing sounds that reached the heavens. At the same time, Krishna, also excited with rage, blew his conch shell, creating a sound that seemed to make the universe vibrate. As word of Arjuna's vow got around the camp, the sound of numerous drums and other instruments could be heard, along with the fierce cries of many warriors. The whole camp was filled with a joyous uproar. Surely the next day the Kauravas would face their worst calamity so far. The enraged Arjuna was a foe to be feared indeed. In the Kauravas' camp there was much rejoicing. Abhimanyu was one of the greatest warriors among the Pandava army. It was almost as if Arjuna himself had been slain. Surely Arjuna would now be discouraged and lose his taste for battle. Now that yet another of his sons was slain, this time the beloved Abhimanyu, Arjuna's energy would be sapped by grief. Duryodhan praised Drona and sat in his assembly to discuss the next day's strategy. It should prove easier to encounter their dispirited enemies. Perhaps the same formation could be employed again. Maybe another powerful fighter could be trapped and slain. As the Kauravas were speaking, they heard the din from the Pandavas' camp, reverberating like the roar of the ocean. The Kauravas looked at each other in surprise. Why would the Pandavas be rejoicing? Should they not be feeling despair? Suddenly, Jayadrath burst into the tent. His face was a mask of terror. He stood panting before Duryodhan, sweat running down his face. The Kaurava chief saw him trembling like a sapling in a storm. He asked him the cause of his fear, and Jayadrath replied, "He who was begotten on Pandu's wife by the lustful Indra, that one of perverse intellect, has vowed to kill me tomorrow. May good betide you all. I will now return to my home to save my life. Or if you wish me to remain, you had better assure my safety. In my view, O king, you, Drona, Kripa, Karna, and all the other great rulers here are capable of saving a man, even one seized by death himself." Jayadrath looked around the assembly with wild eyes. His boon from Shiva could well prove to be his destruction. He had enjoyed his moment of glory, but now as a result he was faced with the most deadly danger. Arjuna was famous for keeping his vows, and he would now be angry. The Sindhu king continued, "Having heard the Pandavas rejoicing, I am struck with anxiety. Our spies have told me that Arjuna has vowed either to kill me tomorrow or enter fire. Thus the Pandavas are filled with joy rather than grief. I think it will be wisest for me to return to my own country. No one can prevent Arjuna from fulfilling his vow, not even the gods. We are about to suffer the greatest destruction of our forces yet. Let me now go, my identity concealed." Duryodhan laughed. "O foremost of men, do not be afraid. What person can seek to slay you when you stand amid the Kshatriyas assembled here? I will protect you, along with Drona, Kripa, Karna, Ashvatthama, Shalya, Balika, and the other invincible heroes. Together with our troops, we will stand between you and Arjuna. He will not even be able to get near you tomorrow. Drive the fear from your heart." Duryodhan realized that it would be a formidable task to check Arjuna from fulfilling his vow. At the same time, this was a real opportunity to attain victory. If Arjuna failed, he would certainly remember his promise to take his own life. With both Abhimanyu and Arjuna dead, the Pandavas would then be finished. Duryodhan looked down at the quaking Jayadrath. It would be worth deploying the whole army to protect him. Jayadrath went over to Drona. "What is the difference between me and Arjuna in the proficiency of arms? You have taught us both. How is Arjuna superior to me? Of what should I be wary when the battle comes tomorrow?" Drona replied, "I have taught both you and Arjuna equally, but by his practice of yoga and asceticism, he has become superior to you. Still, I will do everything in my power to protect you from him. Tomorrow I will form such an array with all our troops that Arjuna will never reach its end. Even the gods will not be able to pass the arrangement that I will create to protect you." Drona smiled. Jayadrath had only himself to blame for his present predicament. Like Duryodhan, his hatred for the virtuous Pandavas would lead to his destruction before long. He placed a hand on Jayadrath's shoulder. "If somehow you should be slain, then you will attain heaven. Do not be afraid of death. You have performed sacrifices and carried out your sacred duty as a Kshatriya. Therefore fight without fear, your mind fixed on victory or paradise." Although he assured Jayadrath and understood Duryodhan's mind, Drona knew that Jayadrath was as good as dead. Certainly, Arjuna alone would not be able to cross the entire Kaurava army. But Arjuna was not alone. With Krishna driving his chariot, he could cross the universe, passing the four lokapalas in order to steal the gods' divine nectar. Even without fighting, Krishna would no doubt find some way to protect his friend. And he would need to, for the Pandava hero would face an almost impossible task the next day. Cheered on by Drona, the warriors shouted and blew their conches. The Kaurava leaders began to plan their strategy for the following day. Jayadrath felt his fear vanish, and he set his heart on battle. Perhaps Arjuna's vow would be a blessing in disguise. Shiva's boon may yet prove to be a boon indeed, if it ended up causing the Pandavas' destruction. After hearing Arjuna make his vow, the Pandavas and their followers spent a little while discussing their strategy and then retired for the night. They would decide the next day's battle plans in the morning after they received information from their spies as to how the Kauravas were reacting to the news of Arjuna's promise. Arjuna sat alone in his tent, burning with grief and anger. He could hardly wait for the battle to begin. For over an hour he sat on his bed without moving, his face covered by his two hands. As he sat shedding tears, Krishna came in and sat down by his side. He spoke softly but reproachfully, "O Partha, without first seeking my advice, you have made a difficult vow. That was rash. You have placed a heavy burden on your shoulders. Alas, how will we avoid becoming the butt of ridicule? I have heard from spies that Drona vows to protect Jayadrath. He will form a tremendous array, guarded on all sides by the best of the Kauravas. Six mighty Maharatas, namely Karna, Ashvatthama, Bhurishrava, Kripa, Vishrasena, and Shalya, will stand in the van of that army. Drona himself will stay within a secondary formation, Jayadrath by his side. You will first need to vanquish those six heroes and pass through a thick array of fighters before you can come anywhere near the Sindhu king. Then you will have to fight with the preceptor." Arjuna did not reply. Krishna placed an arm around his shoulder. In the morning, we will consult with your brothers and allies. We need to come up with a strategy to ensure that your vow can be kept. However, O son of Pandu, it will not be easy to accomplish." Arjuna lifted his head. His voice was almost a growl. "The 6 chariot fighters you have named are not equal to even half of my power. You will see me cut apart all their weapons. The Sindhu ruler is a dead man. Before the eyes of his wailing followers and of Drona, I will sever his head from his body. Even if a celestial army headed by all the principal gods protects him, even if I must fight against the personified oceans, mountains, heaven and earth, still you will see him slain by my arrows. I swear by truth itself that nothing will stop me. Especially with you at my side, O Janardhan, my success is certain." Arjuna continued expressing his determination and confidence for several minutes. He was prepared to face even death personified, armed with his irresistible staff. "Tomorrow you will see me rip open the enemy ranks with blazing shafts, like thunderbolts rending a mountain. Arrows shot with the speed of mine will fall by the tens of thousands from Magandiva. I will not restrain myself at all. All men will witness the power of the weapons I have obtained from Yamaraj, Kuvera, Varuna, Indra, and Maheshwar. I will throw the Brahma missile and annihilate anyone who tries to stand in my way. The earth will be filled with the bodies of men, horses, and elephants, all bleeding copiously and deprived of life." Arjuna got to his feet and stood before Krishna with the Gandiva clasped in his hand. His face was flushed and his lips trembled. "The sinful Jayadrath has forgotten his kinship with us and bears us only hatred. I will strike him down tomorrow, making his friends and followers grieve." Arjuna ached for the battle to begin. His arrows seemed ready to leap from his quivers, and the Gandiva vibrated in his hand. He could not understand Krishna's apprehension. What possibility was there of the Kauravas standing against him in his present mood? He placed his bow in its golden case. Unfastening his gleaming armor, he asked, "O Lord, Master of the senses, why do you admonish me? You know my prowess, and you know your own power. When we are together, what are we not able to achieve? Jayadrath may be counted among those already slain in battle. I am Arjuna, of unwavering vows, and you are Narayan. Truth resides in the Brahmins. Humility is seen in the pious. Prosperity attends sacrifice. And victory, O Keshava, is always with you. When this night is past, you should ready my chariot, filling it with every weapon. A great task is at hand." Arjuna and Krishna sat together, breathing like a pair of infuriated serpents. Afflicted by grief, Arjuna felt unable to rest. Krishna also displayed great sorrow. While the Pandavas had been in the forest, he had helped raise Abhimanyu, acting as a loving father toward his nephew. The boy had always been with him. Krishna had personally taught him many of his martial skills, and they had often hunted and sported together in the forest around Dwarka. Seeing both Krishna and Arjuna excited with rage, the gods headed by Indra became anxious. Surely the universe might be destroyed if they both gave vent to their anger. Many ill omens were seen. Dry winds blew, thunder rumbled in the clear sky, and thunderbolts fell to earth. The earth trembled and rivers flowed backwards, while the cries of jackals and crows echoed everywhere. Arjuna asked Krishna to go to the women's quarters and console Subhadra. The Vrishni princess, along with Draupadi and other royal ladies, had come to the battlefield to be with their husbands. Krishna went to her tent and found her lying on the ground, weeping like a female osprey. Taking a seat near her, he spoke consolingly, "O daughter of the Vrishni race, do not give way to this grief. Abhimanyu has met the end always sought by heroes. After slaying the enemy by the thousands, he has ascended to the highest regions of heaven. Although a mere youth, he has attained a destination difficult to reach even for accomplished yogis. Surely this is his good fortune. O amiable one, you are the wife of a hero, the daughter of a hero, and the mother of a hero. Born into a race of heroes, you should not lament one who has met a hero's death. Nor will his death go unavenged. Tomorrow you will hear that Arjuna has severed Jayadrath's head from his trunk. Rise up and renounce your fever of grief. You must now console your daughter-in-law, O beloved sister. Subhadra looked at Krishna from where she lay. Her eyes were red and her face streaked with mascara. Her ornaments were strewn about her on the floor. Nearby, her garland lay crushed. Her words were frequently interrupted by sobs. Alas, son of my unfortunate self, why did you go to war? O son, equal to Arjuna in battle, how could you perish? How can I see your dark and handsome face now soiled with dust and smeared with blood as you lay on the cold ground? Having the Pandavas, Vrishnis, and Panchalas as your protectors, by whom have you been slain like one helpless? Fie on Bhima's strength, Arjuna's prowess, and the Panchalas' might. What use is their power when they could not save a child from dying right before their eyes? Today I see the earth vacant and destitute of all beauty, for I cannot see my son. My eyes are blinded by grief, and my mind is utterly confounded. O my child, you were like a hoard of treasure seen and lost in a dream. Alas, everything in this world is fleeting and unreal, like foam on an ocean. Krishna remained silent as his sister poured out her sorrow. She tossed about on the costly carpet that covered the floor of her tent. Her silk garments were in disarray, and her raven black hair hung loose and disheveled. Beating her breast, Subhadra cried out to her slain son, "O my child, how shall I comfort Uttara?" Overwhelmed by sorrow, she resembles a cow bereft of its calf. Surely the ways of destiny are mysterious, for even though you had Keshava as your protector, you have been slain by evil men. O beloved son, may you attain that end reached only by the most pious men, that end which is reached by those of the strictest vows, who are self-controlled, modest, truthful, charitable, and devoted to duty. May you ascend to the eternal regions that belong to men who are faithful and always devoted to the Lord's service, who have given up all selfish thoughts and live only for the welfare of others. As Subhadra rolled about in grief, Draupadi came into her tent, accompanied by Uttara. Also lamenting, they dropped to the ground next to Subhadra. The three ladies appeared like three mad creatures as they fell about, uttering pitiful cries. With tears in his eyes, Krishna sprinkled cool water on their faces, his voice shaking as he addressed them. O Subhadra, throw off this grief. O Panchali, O Uttara, take heart. O most beautiful ladies, rather than lament, we should pray that all the members of our race attain the same state that Abhimanyu has attained. All other warriors united can only dream of achieving the feats that he has single-handedly accomplished in battle. Krishna took leave from the ladies and went back to Arjuna's tent. It was past midnight, and the servants had spread out an auspicious bed of kusha grass, decorated with flower garlands, and sprinkled with perfume on a thick rug. With his weapons by his side, Krishna reclined peacefully, placing his head on his arm. Within the tent, Brahmins performed the usual nightly ceremony of offering the victims of battle to Shiva, so that he might guide them safely to their next destination. Arjuna worshipped Krishna with various offerings, then lay next to him on his own bed. Krishna said, "O son of Prita, rest now. You will have to achieve tremendous feats tomorrow." Arjuna was comforted by Krishna's care. He lay gazing up at the high roof of the tent. His mind flickered between thinking of Abhimanyu and thinking of Jayadrath. That sinful wretch should have been slain long ago when he first insulted Draupadi. This time Yudhisthira would not protect him. He would soon taste the fruits of his wicked inclinations. As Arjuna lay thinking in this way, he fell into a fitful sleep.